This is the Gas House Gang on 104.1 FM KMOX. Sponsored by Saliga Heating and Cooling, a Daikin Comfort dealer. Now, the Gas House Gang on KMOX.
Bernie Miklas and Chris Ronji today on this Thursday. Hello, and thank you for being with us yet again for the Gas House Gang. 10 to 1. Noon to 1 every weekday on 104.1 FM KMOX. The Cardinals have, apparently, they have decided to keep their entire coaching staff around with a couple of additions. We will get into that. We also will talk a little bit about the Blues, who play the Vancouver Canucks and have lost 5 straight games. The Blues have, not Vancouver. The Blues have lost 5 in a row. And we start things off, Bernie Miklas and Chris Ronji today. And Bernie, here's what I think. You and I should never make any sort of World Series predictions ever again, because as soon as the Dodgers won that 18-inning game a couple of nights ago, you and I both said, oh, yeah, this thing's just about done now. L.A. will wrap this thing up post-haste. They will not, apparently. We're at least going to Game 6, and the Blue Jays have a chance to finish it up tomorrow.
I thought after that 18-inning marathon and the heartbreaking fashion of the Jays lost it. I thought they were cooked. I did. I would probably feel the same way if the same thing had, we could go back in time. I'd feel the same way. But you know what I think it comes down to, and I'm speaking for myself and I'm probably speaking for you, but generally in this matchup, I think we've underestimated Toronto the entire time, because if you look at the regular season, they won more games than the Dodgers. This was a team that had more comeback wins than anybody in the majors. This is a team that had the best home field record than anybody in the majors. This is a team that chased a good Yankees team down after trailing the Yankees by 8 games in the American League East. There's a relentlessness about them. They're really, really smart. I think their pitching is underrated. They have a lot of grinding players. They also have some superstars. I think they play good defense. I think that this is, and I will speak for myself here because I'm going to be very critical of myself. I think it's as easy to just get all swept up in the glamour and the payroll and the aura of the Dodgers. And I think it caused me to not give Toronto enough credit for how good they really are.
The thing about a team like the Dodgers is they're built for both the regular season and postseason. But if you give a team like that, with that kind of talent, 162 games, they're gonna finish with close to 100 wins. That's the nature of baseball. That's going to happen in a shorter series, a best of 5, even a best of 7. You know, a few breaks go the other way, and you lose that series. We have seen 110 win teams. Wasn't it the Seattle Mariners from about 20 years ago that won?
Yeah.
Something like 110, 112 games got bounced right away in the division series. That doesn't mean they weren't the best team in baseball at the time. It just means that at that moment in a short series, they lost. So, look, I think that going into the playoffs, my philosophy has always been this. And again, I realize it is not my money that I am spending, but a team should do everything they possibly can to clear up or to plug as many holes as they might have on their roster so that when they go into the playoffs, there's less doubt. It doesn't mean there's no doubt. It just means that there is more margin of error for you to fail. And I don't think enough teams approach the postseason like that. They say, hey, this is a good regular season team. We put together this really good regular season team, so we know we're going to make the playoffs. It's just all we have to do is get to the postseason. And once we get there, then it's about getting some luck or having the bounces go your way. And while that is true a lot of times, it's not everything, you know. So, I mean, you're right. We get caught up in how good the Dodgers are and the superstars and Mookie Betts and Shohei Ohtani and Freddie Freeman and Clayton Kershaw and, you know, Yamamoto and guys like that, because they are superstars. But they are also set up very well once they get to the postseason, but nothing is guaranteed once you get there, Bernie.
And where I feel particularly stupid is getting caught up with the Dodgers, who are a great team, by the way, so it's not like anybody's nuts for thinking they were going to win the World Series. But we know that the Dodgers had a glaring weakness and a really, really important weakness your bullpen. I mean, when you talk about postseason baseball and close games, and you have a bullpen that is atrocious as theirs is, and granted, that bullpen came through in a huge way in Game 3, the 18-inning game. All right. That was the outlier, though. That wasn't the reality. The Dodgers' bullpen just completely fell apart during the season. They've had injuries. They got about $85 million in reliever salaries, not even in on the World Series roster because of injuries or bad performances. This is a really bad bullpen. And in the three losses in this series, the Dodgers' bullpen has got like an 8.38 ERA. I mean, they were a liability in Game 4. They were a liability last night. And the Toronto relievers are unheralded, but they're pretty damn solid, you know? And they really are. And then the other thing I didn't expect are, you know, the Blue Jays being able to win two in a row out there when, you know, when it looked like they were in serious trouble, when they didn't have George Springer, who's a great postseason player. And the other thing, to use like a horse racing term, if you know going into game four and game five, everything's up for grabs. All right, what exact combination would you take? Would you take Ohtani and Snell, or would you take Bieber and Yesavage? I think most people probably would take Ohtani and Snell.
Of course.
But in the last two nights, Bieber and Yesavage, the kid that was the best rookie pitching performance in the history of baseball in a World Series, those two guys over two nights pitched to a 1.45 ERA, and Ohtani and Snell pitched to a 6.4 ERA. So that's to your point about, listen, we think we know how it'll play out. A lot of it has to do with the regular season stuff. It's a whole new season in the postseason, and that's how an Ohtani and a Snell in back-to-back nights can get beat up pretty good when really, realistically, that shouldn't happen. But it's baseball, and it does happen.
Well, Atreya Savage, who punched out 12 last night through 7, that dude didn't even make it to the big league roster until September 15th.
Right.
So why would you bet on that? Why would you say, okay, this guy in a massive World Series, a pivotal game, is going to do what he did last night? You just wouldn't predict that. You would say, yeah, I'll take Blake Snell 10 times out of 10. And if the other guy beats you, then that is one of those literal tip your cap moments. You just say, okay, well, you did it, kid. 22 years old. He had 3 games pitched before he even got to the, you know, before he got to the postseason, and that's what he does. You never would have predicted that was going to happen at the end of September.
You know, and before, I love this too, because there was people, and I understand this. I'm not taking a shot. People were talking about, yeah, I mean, that kid's really impressive, you know, but he hasn't pitched an inning on the road in the postseason, and wow, during the regular season, he actually pitched 4 innings on the road. So he's not used to this setting. He's not used to this environment. Well, I think maybe he was pretty comfortable.
Yeah.
He is really, really good. And, you know, but the other thing is that Dodgers offense, if you look around, there are a lot of old players in that lineup, and those old dudes are not hitting. And
right.
Will Smith is not hitting. And they're playing lousy defense. And, I mean, there's a lot of fundamental breakdowns. So I think the Dodgers are rattled. Now, let's go back the other way for a second, and it'll be a quick second. All they have to do to kind of settle everything down, and it doesn't mean they're going to win the World Series, but they have their best starting pitcher going in Game 6. Yamamoto has been phenomenal, absolutely phenomenal. All they got to do is win that game. I'm not saying they will, but if you want to say, well, how do they recover? He can stabilize things quickly if he's on point. And then in Game 7, it's kind of like, well, you know, both managers will throw every pitcher they can out there and use everybody. And then that's one of those, I'm not going to say it's a coin flip game, but it's up for grabs.
Toronto is, they're playing at home. The Blue Jays are going to play at home for the next couple of nights. And I would still... even though they have the home field advantage for Game 7, if it happens, I would not want to let it get to 7.
Right.
I wouldn't want to play around with that. I mean, they are still very, very good, and a Game 7 is a Game 7. They will be at home, but it's just kind of one of those things where you don't want to open the door anymore for LA if you don't have to. I just would not want to play around with that.
You know, and the other thing about Toronto, which I did know about, but didn't really think about too much, if you just look at their regular season stats, and the reason I'm talking regular season stats is because their postseason stats reflect it. This is such a smart team in terms of hitting approach. They had the lowest strikeout rate in the majors this year. They had the number one contact rate in the majors this year, the second lowest swing and miss rate. They had the lowest rate of called strikes, seventh lowest chase rate. They swing at a very high percentage of pitches in the strike zone. They just know what they're doing. They have a plan, and they're really good at executing the plan. Their plate discipline and putting the ball in play and grinding out at bats is phenomenal. That's a really big thing. That's a very, very important attribute to have at this time of year, where you're not swinging and missing and flailing around.
Right.
You know, the Dodgers were swinging for home runs. Dave Roberts even said that the last two nights. You know, our guys are kind of in between. Do I try to put the ball in play? Do we swing for home runs? He said, I think we're trying to swing for home runs. Toronto's not trying to do that. They're trying to do what they've done all year, and I admire that.
And it kind of does, you know, if you've got good enough hitters and you're making good contact, the ball's going to leave the yard. So it's not like you have to try to hit home runs. But there is a knowledge that teams in the postseason who do mash a lot, they end up winning a lot.
Yeah.
And I know that they're all conscious of that, even though I don't like to use the word small ball. But I think that there are times we're going to have to put a little something together, manufacture a run, for lack of a better word or lack of a better term. But still, the way to win, even in the postseason, is to pitch really well and to give a little bit of power. Those are just two really big ways to advance.
I agree. But yet Toronto does have power.
They do.
But they do the other style of game very well, as in addition to having the power. It's not like the Blue Jays are devoid of power. We've seen that. What have they hit this postseason? They've hit a bunch of home runs. And they start the game last night, three pitches, two home runs. I mean, which totally took that crowd out of it.
Yes. Then there you go. I mean, you get off to an early lead and you do it with power. You're absolutely right. And if LA does that tomorrow night, if they score early, that could be really tough for Toronto to come back from. Saliga Heating and Cooling brings you this show, SaligaHeatingAndCooling.com. Got Bernie Miklas with me and Chris Ranji. We did get a little bit of news. I don't think there's any real surprise here, but Katie Wu of The Athletic earlier today reporting that the Cardinals are expecting to retain their entire coaching staff with some additions. And even though it's not like unpredictable, we kind of had an idea this was going to happen. Still, it looks like it is. We'll get Bernie's thoughts on that when we come back on KMOX. Gas House Gang, Bernie Miklas is here, brought to you by Saliga Heating and Cooling, a Daikin dealer. I'm Chris Ranji, and we're with you until 1 o'clock today. Mike Farron from MLB Network Radio will be with us at 12:30. We'll talk about the World Series and more with him. But Bernie, Katie Wu from The Athletic earlier today, I mentioned this a couple of minutes ago, but she had reported that the Cardinals, and again, this is not really a surprise, but it gives a little more clarity, I think, as to what's about to happen here with the team going into next year. But she reports that the entirety of last year's coaching staff is set to return under Oliver Marmol. A couple of different changes, though. Packy Elkins, who was the game planning coach, and the assistant pitching coach, Dean Kikifer, is that right? Kikifer? I'm not familiar with him, but he is going to transition to more of a strategist role. Also, they are expected to hire a new assistant pitching coach and an assistant hitting coach. So it's not as if nobody's getting fired. Basically, what's happening here is nobody is being fired, and they are planning to add to the organization. Furthermore, she says that another series of staff changes will occur throughout the organization, which is more of a addition kind of situation, where they are adding to the structural, the foundational level that we are always talking about, that this Cardinals team has to get a lot better at that. So expanding in the pro scouting department. There's going to be a director of hitting and an international scouting director. There are going to be multiple support roles that are going to be added as well. So this is a very big deal, and I wouldn't call it a departure, really, from what the Cardinals have been doing. It's just a lot of extra stuff the Cardinals are going to be doing that they have not been doing before. We know that they have had some real difficulty in drafting and developing and graduating players to the big league level over the last several years. There have been a couple of exceptions, obviously, but this team does not and has not done it lately the way they have been doing it in the past. And we were able to reestablish with Bernie Miklas here. And Bernie, we're talking about the coaching staff coming back from next year or for next year, and how this is going to pretty much be the same coaching staff from 2025. And that's going to upset some Cardinals fans because they think there should be some massive changes. Well, we knew there weren't going to be. And I think that people probably should prepare themselves for that at least being the same next year. It's just a matter of what the roster looks like. And again, I have no problem with bringing everybody back from 2025.
Well, I don't either. I think Chaim Bloom, who is in charge of remaking this organization, he liked what he saw of Marmol and the coaching staff in 2025. And he wants to take a fuller look, because the difference being there's clarity because Chaim Bloom is the boss. There's not two bosses. Yeah. Chaim Bloom can work more directly with this group, but he likes what they how they handled this past season, as he should have, because they had a terrible assignment and they made the best of it. But what fans need to understand is it doesn't mean that Ali Marmol and this coaching staff, they're safe for the next 3 or 4 years. You know, his contract's up after next season. I was talking to a friend of mine who was upset that he hasn't entirely cleaned out the front office. And I'm just trying to tell people that, look, just because someone worked for John Mozeliak, it doesn't mean that they're awful at their jobs. You know, sometimes we all have bosses. If we get a new boss, the new boss sees things in us that maybe the old boss didn't.
That's right.
Chaim Bloom wants to be fair to people. He sees some real talent in that organization as far as leadership. What, he should fire Randy Flores because John Mozeliak fired him or hired him? I mean, is that what we want? If you've got the John Mozeliak taint, you got to go? That's well, childish and it's stupid. I mean, it's just ridiculous. So Chaim Bloom wants to evaluate this manager and that staff the entire season as their direct supervisor would and should. I mean, it makes all the sense in the world. There is no reason to swap out everybody now when you're entering a rebuild and, you know, a year from now, everything's up in the air again anyway.
You know, I think that's a really good point, what you bring up about just because somebody worked for a front office that you deem to be not particularly good, or a president of baseball operations that you as a fan may not think was very good at his job. I would disagree with that. But let's say you don't think he was. And then you say, well, why would you keep anybody around from that staff? That doesn't make a whole lot of sense, because even in the worst organizations in any sport, there are good, talented people within those organizations. They may be miscast. They may just be working with a bunch of dopes, and they have no opportunity to prove how good and smart they are because they're in a bad organization. I remember when I was working White Sox games years ago, and this is before Kansas City ended up winning a World Series, I had people, you know, Sox fans who would say, why would you ever get anybody from the Kansas City Royals organization? Like, what are you talking about? Zach Greinke came from the Royals organization. Does that mean he's no good just because by virtue of him being with Kansas City? Of course he's good. You know, so I think that when people make blanket statements about entire front offices, entire rosters or organizations and say that guy's no good because he worked here, that's really foolhardy to me.
And people are talking, they have no base of knowledge about each individual front office guys or women, their individual strengths and weaknesses.
Yeah.
They have no idea how those jobs were assimilated, what orders they got. Heim Bloom, and I talked to him about this, he thinks there's a lot of talented people in that front office, and he wasn't going to rush into premature decisions and just start dumping people to dump people. I really like Bloom, and, you know, I've already noticed, like, people are annoyed, you know, because I expressed my admiration of how he's going about this, but I am. And the one thing I like about it is he's not giving in to any kind of pressure, like to score cheap points so the fans will like him. Well, I'll throw this guy over the side. I'll fire this guy. I'm going to make him happy. I'll make the media happy. No, he's doing what he thinks is best, and he was empowered to do so. You don't hire him unless you give him full authority to make these kinds of decisions. And he's not going to make willy-nilly, hasty, well, I'm going to do it to play to the public type decisions. Cardinals, he's got too much integrity for that. I'm
just,
sorry, man.
You know, it's okay. They're just not in position to be doing window dressing stuff.
Right.
Just eyewash. Cardinals don't need eyewash. They need results. They need prudent decisions that will pay off down the road. This is not a fix everything in one off-season situation, because if that's what you're waiting for, that is not going to happen. Bernie Miklas.
And if he does change a manager, I just want people to know. See, people need to start to accept the way things are. If he does fire or choose to replace Ollie Marmol after next season, he will pick his own manager.
Right.
He's not going to take a media poll or a fan poll.
That's correct.
He's got a list of people, because all front office guys have a list of candidates if they need him. He will pick his own guy. He's not going to pick a former Cardinal because he thinks it'll be a popular choice.
Guesthouse Gang is brought to you by Saliga Heating and Cooling. SaligaHeatingAndCooling.com. Bernie Miklas, Chris Ronji. We'll talk to Mike Farron from MLB Network Radio when we come back, and we'll get his thoughts on Albert Pujols, who appears to be the front runner to be the Padres' next manager. We'll talk World Series with him as well. That's all coming up.
Now back to the Gashouse Gang, sponsored by Saliga Heating and Cooling on 104.1 FM KMOX.
The Gashouse Gang with Bernie Miklas is brought to you by Saliga Heating and Cooling, a Daikin dealer. Bernie and Chris Ronji today until 1 o'clock. World Series is getting ready for Game 6, which will be tomorrow night, and then a potential Game 7 on Saturday. And Toronto leads that series 3-2, so it could be over tomorrow night. And joining us now on the Gashouse Gang is Mike Farron with MLB Network Radio, and Mike joins the show. Good afternoon, Michael. How are you?
Oh, boys. How are we looking today?
Hey, man. We're getting ready for a Game 6 here. I love a Game 6. I talk about it all the time. I love the uncertainty of it. You'll either have a champion tonight, or you'll just be getting ready for a Game 7. And as Toronto has taken the lead and brought it back home, Bernie and I were talking the other day after that 18-inning game that, oh, this is over. Dodgers are about to win this thing. And now look at what Toronto's doing.
Yeah, look at the Dodgers' history in losing 18-inning Game 3s, right? It hasn't gone so well afterwards. They lost it in 2018, too, lost that World Series in 5. You know, listen, I think Toronto, because they have some very non-famous offensive pieces and some secondary bullpen pieces that nobody knows, I don't think that they probably got the respect that they deserved over the course of the season. Remember, they finished tied for the best record in the American League and were the top seed by virtue of the tiebreaker with the Yankees. And listen, I don't want to make this sound like I'm pointing fingers. I was skeptical that this offense was good enough through most of the year, right? I was skeptical that this bullpen was going to be good enough to keep them afloat in the postseason. I didn't know what their rotation was going to be look like. Like, I'm one of the biggest Trey Savage fans that you will see. Like, I thought that was the steal of the draft last year when they got him. There's no way I expected Trey Savage, you know, a year out from being drafted out of East Carolina to be pitching like maybe the greatest rookie performance ever in World Series history. So, like, there's a lot of things that they have done that have defied expectations, even for those of us that have followed this team closely. But they are a good team. And the things that they do well, they do really, really well. And right now they have married that with a Dodger offense that cannot get out of its own way to be able to run a lead and be a win away from winning the World Series championship.
Mike, Bernie Miklas, man, always great to have you on here. I wanted to ask you about Toronto. Listen, I mostly watch National League ball. I admit I didn't watch a ton of Blue Jays games this year, so I underestimated them. But looking at their stuff, and we were talking about this a few minutes ago, their hitting approach, their contact skills, their plate discipline, the way they grind at bats, what we're seeing in the postseason is an extension of who they were during the regular season. And you watch all of these teams. In terms of quality at bats, how many do you see many teams in the major leagues that are better than these guys in terms of their hitting philosophy and implementing it?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think they're all that dissimilar from a lot of the champions that we've had over the last decade. In fact, their offense, to me, mirrors most closely the Astros teams in like 17, 18, and 19. Those were, now granted, the Blue Jays, as far as we know, don't have the benefit of a trash can being banged on to help them out. But those were teams that did not strike out and hit for power. And that's what the Toronto team does. They have power, whether it's doubles or homers, and they don't strike out. And one of the reasons they don't strike out is, I would actually disagree a little bit, I don't find them to be a particularly grindy group. In fact, if you look at them last night, the first time through the order against Blake Snell, who's known for walking the farm, right? Every single hitter in that lineup swung at the first or second pitch. So one of the reasons they don't strike out is something that was an old Astros philosophy that had them go from a big strikeout team when they first made the playoffs in 2015 to this really good offensive club that they had in 17, 18, 19, is don't let the first good one go by. And that's what I think they're really good at. So they're a little bit more aggressive early in the count. And then I also think one of the things that they have done is something that a lot of teams like to mirror, in that they have kind of shelved the let's only get off our A swing talk and let's make sure that we have a B and a C swing, right, based on situation. So I think that's something that they do very well. They are not afraid to punch a ball the other way. They're not trying to get off an extra base hit swing all the time. They're going to try and move the ball forward, and I don't think they're the only team that does that as well. So I think that's another important part of what they do as a group, is that they have been able to make those adjustments. But I do not think that they are overly unique in any way, other than to say that they were the team with the lowest strikeout rate in the big leagues during the course of the season. But a lot of it is because they're aggressive early in the count. They put it in play. And listen, they're scoring a huge percentage of their runs via the home run in the postseason. It's almost 50%, which, again, power plays.
Let me, because you brought up the Astros, this made me think of something, because they are one of the teams in the last dozen years that has won multiple World Series. There are only two of them, and it's the Dodgers and the Astros. And if the Blue Jays win this series, it will be 10 of the last 12 World Series different winners. So 10 different teams will have won the World Series in the last 12 years. Seems like a lot of parity to me. So I bring that up to preface the conversation about the lockout coming up and how owners are going to want that salary cap. They've always wanted it, and they'll point to this World Series. You got the top payroll team and then the fifth payroll team, and you can't compete with those guys in to get to a World Series. But wouldn't you say that the diversity of teams that have won the World Series in the last dozen years kind of speaks to some parity here and the elimination of that argument?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really complicated and very complicated to unpack in just a couple of minutes. So there are a couple things that you have to accept as being true. Is there a great revenue disparity between the Dodgers and, say, the Brewers, who are the smallest market? Yes, 100%, full stop, right? They're in the second largest market. They have an international superstar, which, again, any team could have signed, right? And they have been able to fully actualize more money by being able to take advantage of that, whereas Milwaukee's just going to have fewer opportunities because they're in the smallest media market, right? So those things are absolutely both true. Is the idea that there is payroll disparity between the teams solely because of the revenue disparity? No, I don't think that that's true at all. And I think that there are plenty of teams that are not spending it the means that they could, and specifically the ones at the bottom of the barrel, right? Like, as much as I don't think that there's any fan base that has screamed louder and longer, or any media group that has screamed louder and longer for a salary cap than the Pirates and their fan base. The problem is, if you get a salary cap for Pittsburgh, is that they still have the same owner who doesn't seem to be willing to invest a nickel into adding players that would actually help to push them over the top. You guys saw a lot of Pirates this year. That's a win now pitching staff. That is, I mean, that is mismanagement of the highest level to not support that with a better roster, to support it with position players that actually could help them win if the goal is to win. I think the other thing is that the nature of baseball leads itself to more randomness, and especially in short series. You know, Bernie, you and I go back about the same length in like the old baseball prospectus stuff, right? And sure, we always talk about how luck plays a disproportionate factor in the postseason. Well, that's true. And so this postseason format, I actually think, is really fair. And the commissioner said this too, for the smaller market teams, because you get a chance to win, right? Like, all you have to do is win series. And we're not going to be at a spot, unless we're going to make every round a best of 75. And there is some statistical backing for that, where it's the NBA and 80% of the favorites win. So I think that that's helpful as well. But this, past this prologue, right? Everything that's coming out now is the same discussion that was had in the mid-90s and into the first part of the Yankees dynasty in the late 90s and early 2000s. And I don't believe any of it. The sky is not falling, nor is the system perfect.
But Mike, you again, man, your veteran eye and ability to observe things, but you got to explain something to me. How can a team with a $400 million-plus payroll not have a bullpen?
Especially when they spent all that money on the bullpen. Like, that's the best part of it, right?
I know, right?
It's like, they spent, like, the I don't know if you remember, who was it? Was it Ken Rosenthal or was it Jeff Passan that wrote this summer about how the Tanner Scott signing was the one that sent everybody over the edge with the Dodgers because they gave him $72 million, right? The Cubs missed out on him by like $6 million. Tanner Scott's not even on the World Series roster. And I guess some of it is because he had a medical procedure, but he also wasn't pitching well this year, right? So, yeah, I do think that that's really funny that here they spent all this money on Kirby Yates and Tanner Scott and bringing back Blake Treinen, and like, they're in these biggest spots and they're counting on Jack Dreyer, who is an undrafted free agent out of Iowa, right? Like, I find it amusing. I don't think it's from a lack of effort. I think the fact that they do have guys like Dreyer and Enriquez and Robleski speaks to how good they are at developing pitching in that organization, and some of the depth they're just not experienced. And they kind of ended up in a spot where I couldn't imagine going into the year you would have told them it would have played out this way, where you've invested in all this elite starting pitching that has injury histories, and you've invested in all these relievers that have injury histories, and it's only the starters that are healthy at the end of the year, not the relievers. My guess is that was not on the Andrew Friedman bigger.
Mike Farron is with us. If the phone is still working, we have one last question for you. If not, we're going to say goodbye. But Albert Pujols had a 9.5-hour meeting apparently with the Padres the other day, still potentially their manager. Is that who's going to get the job?
I can't, Andy. I don't have a good feel of that. But I think that Albert is legitimate there. Something needs to happen in a 9.5-hour meeting.
Yeah, unfortunately, we're losing Mike.
9-minute meeting's too much.
Oh, there he is. Okay, hang on. Mike, yeah. So we appreciate you. Thank you for being with us. We're running out of time. Reception's no good. It's not your fault. We love you anyway.
Yes.
And you said Albert Pujols should be the manager of the Padres and the Cardinals and every other team in baseball. That's what I heard.
Albert will be the manager for every team in baseball very soon. It's going to be super exciting.
Thank you, Mike Farron.
All right, guys. Take care.
All right, Bernie, before we get to a little Blues talk, because they've lost 5 in a row, there is one other managerial note that today we learn of. The Washington Nationals about to make Blake Butera their new manager for 2026. What is notable about Blake, first of all, he is the brother of Drew Butera, but also he's 33. So he will be the youngest manager since 1972. Frank Quilisi was 33 years old. Prior to that, Dave Bristol in 1966 with the Reds was 33 years old, and Blake Butera, 33 years old, the manager of the Washington Nationals, which I don't know how that makes me feel. I do know that when Andy Green got hired as the Padres manager years ago, and that was the first manager in my lifetime who was younger than me, that was the first time I really felt like, uh-oh, it's over. You know what I mean?
33. Yeah. Ali Marmol's an old man compared to that.
It's absolute craziness. But anyway, that is happening, it looks like. He'll be the manager of the Nationals. It leaves now only the Braves, Padres, and Rockies jobs vacant because a bunch of other guys have already been named managers of their respective teams. So Blues have lost five straight games. They got Vancouver tonight at home, and we have talked about, my gosh, every bit of everything with them and what's been going on, and the goals against is just through the roof. They are the second worst in the NHL in giving up goals per game. James Hofer, who is usually a pretty good goaltender, has had a miserable season so far. And again, it's still very early, and I said this yesterday, that we're 12% of the way through the season. So it's, you know, still a lot of runway here. Sorry about using runway. Still, there's a lot of time left in this season, obviously. But there's, you know, it's not like nothing. You know, some time has passed here, and it's a little unfortunate where they are, Bernie. You just hope that that starts to change tonight, because you don't want to let it get out of hand too much.
Jeremy Rutherford of The Athletic does such a great job covering the Blues. I mean, he just summed it up perfectly. His story yesterday, he just said the St. Louis Blues are broken, and they are. This isn't a case of like there's one thing wrong, a couple things wrong. Just about every aspect of their play is bad. It's poor. The goaltending is the worst in the league, going by save percentage. You have five or six of their top forwards doing nothing at even strength or 5-on-5. You have defensemen getting lost in the ice, not where they should be. You know, they're disorganized. I could just go on and on and on. The special teams aren't great. They can't win at home. And so it's a situation where a little tweak here, a little tweak there is not going to resolve it. They got plenty of time to resolve it. It's 72 games left. But this is only the 16th time in 58 seasons of Blues hockey where they won three or fewer games in their first 10 games of a season. The previous 15, the good news there is that 10 recovered to make the playoffs, including the Stanley Cup winning Blues. So that I only offer that not as any kind of like false optimism, but just to show you when Ranji and Mikolas and everybody says it's a long season. Yeah, it's a long season. We've seen other Blues teams get off the horrible starts and recover to make the playoffs and even win a Stanley Cup. So yeah. I'd like to see some of these broken pieces get fixed soon, though, right?
You're right, and that could happen. They may well pick it up just in time. I just don't want to keep playing around with that. You know what I mean? I just don't want to have to do this every year where they need to go on some sort of miracle run in the second half. Hey, Bernie, we'll do it again next week. I know you are on Rush Hour Sports tomorrow, so we'll be listening into that, and then we will talk to you on Tuesday of next week.
Ranj, always love being with you, pal. Take care.
You too, my friend. Bernie Mikolas, Chris Ranji on the Gas House Gang. This show back tomorrow. Mike Claiborne and me. Tomorrow afternoon, starting at 12 o'clock, Gas House Gang on KMOX. Dave Glover is next.